Welcome once again into the Soccer OG. Hey, that's me, Max Bretos. Episode 193. As we always like to, a gentle reminder to rate, review, download, subscribe, and tell a friend. We are rocking and rolling through 2024. Make sure you go over to my YouTube channel under my name, Max Bretos, to check out the latest video, which got published yesterday, about the Nations League, USA and Mexico, the United States lifting a third straight Nations League trophy. And this is going to be a show about that game and about the two programs. Joining me in the business end, Mauricio Pedrosa of ESPN and ESPN Deportes of the show Ahora o Nunca with Hercules Gomez. We will get an idea of what is going on south of the border after this defeat. To me, the biggest story of that Nations League final is the state of Mexican football. USA looks good, although not much has changed. There's still some work in progress, but Mexico, we'll talk to Mauricio and see how much change could be lying in the future for that program ahead of the very important Copa America. No check complete this week as we focus on USA-Mexico. I'm going to give you all my thoughts on the game coming up here in the rundown, and we'll give you a lot of good information. A little bit of what's happening in the world of football, too. This is a big international window, the big one of 2024. USA will not be getting together again until June, right before the Copa America, so we're going to squeeze the lemon. The rundown is next. Okie dokie, we are back. And a lot of going on, a lot of interesting friendlies. The big thing, because what we have seen now is we almost have a complete Euro 2024 tournament. We have a complete Copa America. So there was those games, and I talked about it last week, Canada and Trinidad and Tobago. Canada won. Great news for the Copa, so that we get a big ticket item in Canada, and Alphonso Davies and Jonathan David and Tejon Buchanan. We get Canada in there. That matters. I think Canada is going to advance out of their group of the Copa. I don't think Trinidad and Tobago would. It's good for the tournament. I want four CONCACAF teams to make the quarterfinals. Maybe that's the over-under is probably 2.5. You figure USA and Mexico makes it. I'll talk to Mauricio about it coming up here in the business end to see if he thinks Mexico will make the quarterfinals. Remember, it's a 16-team tournament, so it gets down to 8. USA is going to make it because they're going to beat Bolivia and they're going to beat Panama. The question is what happens against Uruguay. Marcelo Bielsa versus Greg Berhalter. That's the thing. I mean, that's what we're going to circle on, right? To see where Greg Berhalter lies. But Greg had a good day. We'll get into that. Canada advanced. Honduras took a lead over Costa Rica, but the Ticos came back. They tear into the Copa America field. I mean, they looked really good. And Costa Rica, let's go over the groups here pretty quickly. Group A, Argentina, Canada, Chile, and Peru. I'm going by the flags. Group B, Mexico, Jamaica, Venezuela, and Ecuador. Group C, USA, Bolivia, Panama, Uruguay. Group D, Brazil, Costa Rica, Colombia, and Paraguay. So that doesn't look good for the Ticos. But we have a tournament. That's exciting. Euros, we're going to wrap up that qualification. They have these six playoff teams for three spots. And this is where you see the expansion of these tournaments could get a little dicey because you're getting some teams that probably shouldn't be playing in these major tournaments. I mean, look, the Euros have expanded. The Copa America has expanded. It's still only 16 teams. And then, the Copa America is a pretty exclusive tournament. It's great, but everyone's in it. And the World Cup is expanding. Maybe one day you have a Euro tournament where all the European countries are in there. I don't know how many that is. What's like 100-something? But Georgia played Luxembourg. I'm always hoping for Luxembourg to make it. But they made it to the playoff, but they lost to Georgia. They had to be on the road. Greece crushed Kazakhstan. I think having Greece at a major competition would be great. Wales beat Finland. Poland beat Estonia. And Ukraine beat Bosnia and Herzegovina. And Iceland beat the Israelis on the road. So tomorrow, so we have, some of those weren't the qualifiers, right? What am I saying? Georgia and Luxembourg? No, Georgia was. Greece, yeah. Did I say six games? Yeah, six teams. So now we got to three finals, and the winners of this will go into the tournament. Georgia, Greece, That will be in, it is going to be in Tbilisi, the Georgian capital. The, I'm making a mess of this. I apologize. That one, it's a push, but Georgia's at home. I mean, Georgia had a really good qualification. That's why they got both these games at home. The feel-good game, Ukraine, war-torn Ukraine, who missed out on the World Cup, they will be playing Iceland. That game is going to be in Poland because they can't play in Ukraine, but Ukraine are the higher teams, but that gives Iceland a shot, and we know what Iceland can do when they're in a competition. I mean, their participation at Euro, was it 2016? Was phenomenal. When they beat England, that was one of the great results I've ever witnessed. Tiny Iceland. So I'm pulling for the Icelandic, but Ukraine would be a great story. And then Wales and Poland. I'm so impressed with the Welsh program. Because we always thought Gareth Bale's the guy. It's so much more than Gareth Bale. And now that he's retired, I mean, they're qualifying for competitions without him. I mean, Brennan Johnson is a superb talent. Harry Wilson, so many English, not only playing the Premier League, but playing for important minutes. David Brooks plays at Bournemouth, pretty solid guy. Just good. It's a good team. Wales used to be a rugby country. It's a soccer country. Wales finished, they got the wooden spoon in the Six Nations rugby, which hurts my feelings. But there you go. All right. Let's talk about the United States. We'll talk about Mexico with Mauricio Pedrosa here in a little bit. 2-0, the final score over Mexico. And as we talk to Mauricio, we'll mention how, you know, this was, to me, a testament about the gap that's developed between the U.S. and El Tri. And the U.S. are the powerhouse now in CONCACAF. Question is, CONCACAF, will they prepare the United States? Not that it really matters much, because there's not going to be qualifying. They've already qualified for the World Cup. And qualifying after that should be pretty straightforward for the U.S. in an expanded World Cup. They're going to finish in the top six spots. But preparing you for Copa America, preparing you for a World Cup, I don't know if we've got that. We need Mexico to be good. We need Canada to be good. We need Costa Rica, Honduras, Jamaica all to be a little bit better. I don't sense that right now. I think teams like Costa Rica and Honduras are in flux to see what they are going to be able to accomplish. So, you know, I got to say, I was very disheartened about... I saw some things on Twitter, and it's just someone doing it. Someone had a poll that said, if losing to Mexico means that Greg Berhalter got fired, would you like that? I'm like... I don't want fans like this, that they would prioritize that. I want to say, but Greg Berhalter, is he the best choice? One thing we got to know, and I talked to Mauricio about this, this U.S. program is not for every coach. If you got a high-profile guy, let's say they got Marcelo Bielsa. If you got a high-profile guy like Marcelo Bielsa and he took over this team, I think the team would push back. I don't think, because the U.S. team is coddled a lot. These national teams, what we don't have, what probably prevents us from ever winning a World Cup or doing very well, is that we don't have these players. I was reading an article, it's the young Brazilian player, and he's talking about just, you know, his upbringing, I'm going to do this, and how hard it was, and his mom would have to eat leftover old bread and bring it to the kids. I mean, and soccer was their only... was their only outlet, and then not many, Endrick, and not many make it. And he's talking about this. I'm like, the U.S. players, and they're coddled, right? But that's who we are. You know, soccer's not their only, if they didn't do it, they'd go to college and they would be doing just fine in something else. But most countries have that. It's soccer or bust. So yeah, having a coach that may be a little strict or something, I don't know if it's going to work. I think you need to have a coach, and that's why this group likes Greg Berhalter so much, because he gives them some freedom. He puts his arm around them. And we want a tough coach, right? I want a tough coach. I just don't think it would translate to this. And these American players are not that easy to work with. You need, I don't know if you need an American coach, but you need a certain profile. So I think the U.S. players do better with a coach who puts the arm around there. I think, and also if we talk about get rid of Greg Berhalter, we got to think who do we replaces him. And some people are saying Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp. And I go, come on. we got to live in the real world here. A guy like Marcelo Bielsa would be interesting and could have been available if he wasn't with Uruguay or someone like that. I don't know. We've seen it when Mexico's gone with foreign coaches. It's not so simple. I think you're probably stuck with an American coach. Is there better American coaches than Greg Berhalter? Probably. And by the way, look, unless they just get torpedoed in the Copa America, and even if they do, Greg Berhalter is going to be here, so we can sit here and go Berhalter out and carry on. It's just performative at this part, and it's just taking, you know, let's enjoy this. And I always remind people, some folks want a better looking product. The world of football at the international stage is not a better product than you see at the club game. If you want to watch beautiful football, watch the Premier League, watch La Liga, or one of these other leagues. But the national team, you know, they don't have these players for that long. They don't play each other. Look, the U.S. aren't going to be together for 3 months. Can't expect them to be a well-oiled machine. So managers approach it differently, and they try to make their team hard to beat. Argentina, do you see how they win games? They win at 1-0. They're not attractive on the eye. As much as you think you're seeing something nice, I can assure you, I saw some games of Argentina. I was like fighting to keep my eyes open. France, to a lesser degree. They don't want the ball. They want to counter you because they got the athletes and the technical stars, and they'll punish you. So the world, the international world of football is not generally an attractive item. So you've got to make your team difficult to beat. Greg Berhalter did that at the World Cup. We need to see more goals. I mean, we didn't get a lot. We got two goals, and you know, I think both probably should have been saved by Memo Ochoa. And we don't get enough good chances. But we have some great players, and I want to talk about. You notice we don't even talk about Christian Pulisic. We get so caught up in it. Tyler Adams was the man of the hour. Gio Reyna scored the goal. Christian Pulisic does these remarkable things, and we just go ho hum because we're used to it now. It's the expectation. But man, we didn't know it would get this good. He had that play right before the Gio Reyna goal. And remember, this is a left side. He's playing on the left side. He's a right-sided player. He's right-footed, and he's doing these incredible things with his left foot. So we're talking about the stylistic part. I would also add, you know, I hear a lot of people mentioning, and experts, play the U.S. players at their best position. I disagree with that. I know that sounds crazy. You have to make it work within the system. For example, Gio Reyna's best chance to get on the field was to play a little lower of a midfield role. Greg Berhalter talked to him about it, and he struggled at the beginning, and then he tried to get some work. But he found it. He had a great play to get a free kick, and then he followed up on the goal. It was at the right place. He positioned himself very well. So some people say, why don't you put him where Weston McKennie is? I like Weston McKennie where he's at. Weston McKennie at the World Cup, specifically against England, played that position and played it very well on the right side moving forward. So if you're going to put Gio Reyna in his best position, and you're going to put Christian Pulisic in his best position, which is on the right side, what do you do? What do you do with the left side? You put Tim Weah? No, he's not as effective. Christian Pulisic's so good, he can go either side. So you can't play these guys at their best position. We're not at that point. We don't have depth. We're really good, talent-wise, first-tier talent, but we don't have depth. So Gio Reyna's got to find another position. Gio Reyna's got to adapt. Every time I hear about him, about Nottingham Forest, this is an important practice for him because he's a young player. He's going to get better, and he's shown those strides. He was excellent in this tournament. But when people say, whoa, Gio Reyna, but he's got to play here. No. You play where they put you on the field, or the alternative is not to play at all. The fact that Gio Reyna is getting on here, maybe at a position he's not better at, is a sign that he's putting in the work, and it's also a sign that the coach feels that he can do the job, and he did. So you got to be creative. This idea, just playing the best, it will handcuff us because we don't have a second good winger that can put on the left side. We don't have a midfielder. Well, we do. I mean, but you don't bench McKennie and you don't get rid of a Tyler Adams or whoever plays that six. So Gio Reyna is fighting for one of two spots. If Musa was in better form, that spot could be in peril, although I think we're at the point now where Gio Reyna is in the 11 every time. But it may not be the ideal position. We've got to deal with that. The U.S., you know, it was a labor in the first half. I was worried with some of the lineup choices, and Tim Ream came back, but Tim Ream played very well. Am I more concerned about Chris Richards? I think he was bang average, and he looks timid. And he made some mistakes. And it's going to be interesting. It's probably going to be Ream Richards, but Miles Robinson's in the mix, man. And when Cameron Carter-Vickers gets back, he's going to be in the mix. That's got to be strong because we've got to have a team that doesn't allow goals. Matt Turner was good enough. Wasn't super busy. Made a couple straightforward saves. But that trio's got to be good. The fullbacks are Sergiño Dest came in. Joe Scally's another player that I don't think I need to see him back on a squad if there are better options. I want to see if Reggie Cannon can get going. I want to see DeJuan Jones, who I think is a better option. So it is, there is, I think, you know, Joe Scally's just, I've seen three games with him on the national team and it's been, So he's a guy you don't lock yourself in, which we've argued a lot about, even as a depth piece. So we got to find these spots because when Joe Scally came in, it didn't look good. Sergiño Dest came in, even though he struggles defensively going forward, he's excellent, excellent, excellent. He was a tremendous game going forward. We talked about that midfield. Plisic Weah, the big issue now is at number 9. And Haji Wright got the start. Haji Wright did okay. He was given a position where he kind of had to be a beast of burden, just hold up the play, which is what you want. But the time is ticking for Flo Balogun. He came in and not enough time to really make an impression, I thought. And by then, the U.S. had their result. But Flo Balogun came into this team and he was promised the starting 9 job. I can assure you, that's a good. If you come here, you're going to be the guy. But now we've got to ask ourselves, do you keep that promise? And Flo Balogun's got to believe it because he's not scoring at club and he's not scoring at country. And Haji Wright looks like an option. And Ricardo Pepi didn't come off the bench, still an option. I'm sure Ricardo Pepi's really frustrated, but you can't be when this result. And Haji Wright is looking, he wasn't on this squad, remember, because Josh Sargent had to come out. Haji Wright was going to vacation, and they brought him back in. And he is tearing it up. And he has some important games for Coventry. They have an FA Cup semifinal. It's against Manchester United. They have a shot. They could make an FA Cup final. So he's bringing that back. And I'm pulling for Haji because he's an LA guy. So we want to see these Los Angelinos in the mix. The depth pieces I think we have a good idea. Johnny Cardoso came in solid in the second half. I think we've seen enough now of him where I feel comfortable with Johnny Cardoso as Tyler Adams, which this is where Greg Berhalter looked good because people were questioning whether Tyler Adams should play. He looked great. And then obviously the goal. So I think that's... That's very promising to have another guy you can rely on. Yunus Musa off the bench could be a real impact. Malik Tillman, who didn't look good. It was much better to have Gio Reyna in there. So Malik Tillman, I think, has now lodged himself as a bench player, and that's fine. Brendan Aaronson got a sniff. A lot of guys that, weren't used. Well, we have to see it because we need to have options at fullback. We need to have a winger-type player that we can come off the bench in case anything happens. Because Tim Whale was good. Not exhilarating, but good. And I just want to see some competition maybe at center back. We need, because Chris Richards, to me, is not the five-star-type player that I think people are positioning him because he plays at Crystal Palace. He's not. On the national team, he's not. So the game, as for the game, it was all good, right? I was very happy, and it's like another trophy, and the domination over Mexico, which has left a big gap. Was it like 7 straight wins over Mexico? That is really puzzling. And then the Mexican folks, which feel like, they've been done in, they're feeling like they know that they're second best. You hear the pundits there, they'll say, yeah, Mexico just doesn't have a team that can beat the U.S. right now. It is a big problem. So, a couple things I wanted to talk about. We keep saying about USA-Mexico, is it the best soccer rivalry? Fox did it. Paramount did it. They have these conversations. I go, we got to stop this. Got to stop this. The stretch we're in, this sport could grow to where we want to go, where it shows progress, where more people know what's happening. A lot of people didn't even know this game was going on. Let's be fair. It's on a Paramount stream. The stream was struggling. I think Paramount is doing a great job at CBS with pushing this. I mean, they have a 24-hour soccer channel. That's great for this audience. The Champions League show is fantastic. And they get these USA games too. But it's on a streaming service. And by the way, finding it sometimes is, it should be when that game starts, it should be bang, right in your face. Sometimes you have to fiddle-faddle a little bit. I was looking for the USA under-23s. We're playing against France. And it took me like 2 or 3 minutes to find it. So, maybe I'm just an old geezer. So that explains that. You're probably rolling your eyes. But saying that USA-Mexico is the best soccer rivalry, is you disqualify it because we in this country, 5% of the population care about the sport. Now, I'm not exaggerating. 5%. The World Cup comes around and we'll go, and that number goes up, and then the World Cup ends, and that group of people don't watch another soccer game. That's got to change. When you talk about Argentina and Brazil, even though they don't play that much, and by the way, will USA and Mexico keep playing all the time? Now they don't have World Cup qualifiers this cycle, and who knows what the qualifying process looks like in the future. So it's going to be tainted, but we keep having this conversation. It goes nowhere. And I thought you could do it because of the amount of times they play, but the reality is, you just can't. You know, it doesn't have the emotions of England, Germany, or Germany, Netherlands, or a lot of these rivalries that in other parts of the world. I mean, Mexico's doing their part, but we can't say that from our side. So, I mean, let's move along. It's just counterproductive at this point. I think I mentioned about how much I'm impressed with Christian Pulisic, and Greg Berhalter, in closing, pulled the right strings by getting Pulisic there, by starting Adams, that paid off. That has to be a reflection off of Greg Berhalter. I'm sorry. I understand we can be critical, but it goes so far off the deep end, we lose sight. And sometimes I think we've got to put some blame, just like we put the credit for the players, we've got to put some blame when it's not working well like it did against Jamaica. I mean, even in Mexico in the first half, they couldn't put three passes together. We're not perfect. But I will support Greg as we move forward. I think the target is Copa America semifinal. World Cup is a quarterfinal. I think that's fair. The World Cup's going to be tricky. But we have to see how we do at home. And we went 2-0 at home. Because all these games are going to be in home. So we'll see. It's going to be tough to beat the United States. In the Copa America, the first game's at SoFi Stadium. The first game's in Arlington, Texas against Bolivia, so they got to look at Jerry's World, so it'll feel like a home. The second game is in Atlanta, and the third game is in Kansas City. SoFi is at the World Cup where the U.S. will play. We'll know about that. So, excellent stuff. It's always fun to win trophies. Even afterwards, you know, people want to celebrate, but we keep bogging ourselves down with selections and all that. I mean, I know this happens around the world, but generally winning a trophy, we should be celebratory for 24 hours. We should be. So there it is. Now, I also want to mention about the chant, because I'm fed up with it. This is stupid. This is stupid why we behave this way. And we have no control over it. We think we do by stopping a game. The chant was weaponized by the Mexican public last night. When they were losing, they knew it was what they started screaming it out. And no one's getting in trouble. I don't blame them. I mean, if you get a chance to maybe sabotage the game by the chant, and we stopped it for 3-4 times and go, what are we doing? What are we doing? It's absurd. We're punishing ourselves because of what someone else is doing. Now, if these people were identified and said, you can't come to another soccer game in the United States, all right? You have been canceled. Or I don't know if you can put someone in jail for that. You can't. But you punish them some way instead of us getting punished and sitting here. I want to get on with my life waiting for this pointlessness. It just shows, I mean, sometimes we try to do good things and it blows up in our face. Let the chant go. Let the chant go. You're going to hear it. We have done 0-2 eliminated. It's not going anywhere. And now, the next time, anytime Mexico's, it's going to be even louder. I mean, it's got to be a thrill to be a fan to have that power. You've empowered them that they can stop a game. You put them in charge. So we've got to be smarter about this stuff. But this is just dumb at this point. But I don't want to dampen everything. Hey, we got a trophy. We got the Nations League. And now we move to the Copa America. Look, this team is not going to be together. They're going to have a couple games, friendlies in June, and then they have the Copa America later that month, and it will run through like July 5th, I think. So it's a sprint of a tournament. The U.S. should get through. I think they beat Bolivia handedly. They have a close one against Panama because Panama's proven they've had some issues with them, but it's at home. And then whatever. Let's just say they draw with Uruguay. Let's say they lose. Then they get into the quarterfinals, and then they have a shot against, I think, Colombia or Brazil. I think they make the semifinals. And if they make the semifinals, they can make a final. Especially if they can get out of that side with Colombia, Brazil, and Uruguay. Then the other team, the only team that you should be afraid of on the other side is Argentina. And by the way, Argentina at some point, it's going to stop clicking. They've had a great run, but you don't just keep winning tournaments after tournaments. And this transition with post-Messi, Messi's going to be in the Copa America, but I don't think he's going to be in the World Cup. So it's weird in those transition moments. And people will catch on to Argentina. They've had a lot of good fortune during this stretch. That goes away too. You know, some people, like my guest Binky, says that, you know, Argentina were gifted the World Cup with some of the calls. And they did get a lot of penalties. And sometimes you don't get the penalties, but that's the way it goes. But there it is. Go to the YouTube. I have a lot more on this game under my name, Max Bretos, as we'll preview it. We're going to get into the business end, and let's talk about the very interesting situation that is El Tri. Mauricio Pedrosa of ESPN and ESPN Deportes joins me next. The business end. We continue our conversation about the Nations League final there in Jerry's world. As we head into the business end, Mauricio Pedrosa of ESPN Deportes, who's been on the show before. Proud citizen of San Luis Potosí, correct?
Very proud. Very, very proud.
Let's talk about San Luis Potosí. What, yeah. If I go to San Luis Potosí, what's the thing to eat? What are they famous for?
Oh, we have a very, very typical dish. It's called enchiladas potosinas. So I guess you're familiar with the concept of enchiladas.
Yes.
Right? For those of you who are not as familiar as Max, is basically you take a tortilla and then here comes but it's not a tricky part, but what makes it special is before filling it with anything, you have to fry that tortilla, right? On oil.
We're off to a good start.
But then here's
where you have to oil it in a pan where it doesn't get stiff.
Right, correct. Right. But before here's the part. It's not your regular tortilla. It's not it's not like you have your regular corn dough and then just, you know, round it and.
Tortilleria here.
No, because you add to that, though, you have to add a little bit of picante, a little bit of chile. So the tortilla
into the bread, into the tortilla.
Yes. And the tortilla turns red, especially when you fry it. And then you fill it with very, very thin slices of cheese that has also previously been mixed with chile jalapeño. Right. And they're very small. They're not like big tortillas. So for many of us, it's not a main dish. It's like an appetizer.
But how many of those can you put down?
That is a great question. One sitting, I can easily between 25 and 30.
Oh my God. So they're pretty small, I take it. They're just one tortilla and cheese.
Yes. You have some frijolitos on the side, right? Guacamole.
I haven't had dinner yet. I shouldn't have asked about food.
That's all you need. It's a great appetizer if you're watching a game because it's so simple and so easy to eat. It's not complicated at all. So that's our main dish from home.
Well, I did, when I go down to CBX Airport there, where you can use the Tijuana Airport, there is a direct flight to San Luis Potosí.
I went to see my family and Tijuana, San Luis, direct flight.
That
doesn't get better than that.
The Tijuana Airport, which Americans can use, you do your immigration on the other side. I'm sure I've shared this with you. And you go right across, and it opens up the door to all of Mexico. And you also have, there's a couple of places there you can have a drink. And it's like, there's like a $20. Yes. Have you seen it? There's a $20 place where all you can drink.
Yep. Yeah.
Which I can't. I cannot drink beer, for instance. I can't drink beer on the airplane because I like the window seat. And a beer, I have to go to the bathroom.
Well, Max, that's H.
Yes, it is. It is age. Let's not talk about that. Let's talk about something you're probably sick of talking about, Mexico.
I'm not. Honestly, well, that's what we're here for. I mean, well, that's more what interesting. We do, right? That's what we do.
It's more interesting than the United States. What situation? Because I don't think anything's changed for the U.S. Greg Berhalter is still going to be under the microscope. Still have some questions. We wonder if we are as good as we think we are. I think Mexico hopes so. But, you know, nothing's really changed. But Mexico, they win this game. That's a proof of concept for Jimmy Lozano, right? He goes, he's the guy. We're going. And then they lose it. And they lose it pretty badly. They didn't really in this game. And now, so actually, let me start with what has it been like? Because you're there Ahora Nunca on your show? And there, Ahora Nunca. What other shows were you on today?
So you're gonna be Football Americas. Today I did Jorge Ramos y su banda. Full show. That's a 2-hour show.
And those guys can just go, man.
Yeah. Then Ahora Nunca.
I liked it when it was Jorge Ramos. Y diez más.
There you go. Exactly. I think that. Listen, but you have your name. Like a show is called after you, it's good.
Oh, hey, Jorge Ramos is the man. That guy is a legend. He's a powerhouse legend.
I did that for 2 hours, and then we shoot a digital segment for Ahora Nunca, which takes like 20 minutes, and then live Ahora Nunca show, half an hour, and then we did like 25 minutes on Football Americas, just on the Mexican national team.
What was at the top of the list of biggest concerns?
Yeah.
What was the number one? What was probably the number one?
Great question. I think is, as you said, is Jimmy Lozano in the hot seat, right? Because let's not forget, he got that position as an interim manager. Mm-hmm. He was jobless. He was looking for a job, right? He had managed the under-23 team that won the bronze medal in the Olympics in Tokyo in 2021, 2020 Olympics, 2021. But then he had an experience as a first division manager in Liga MX with Necaxa. That didn't go well. That did not go well. He had another job as manager of Querétaro. First couple of months, that was fine, but then it was a disaster. So he was looking for a job, and then Diego Coca the door.
He's doing better than Diego Coca.
I mean, to a certain point, because players respond to him. That's the main difference. Okay. Players respond to him, and they did not do that to Diego Coca. But people tend to forget that he got the job in interim basis, right? And then they played the Gold Cup against U.S. men's national team. What was that, like the B or C team, right, that they had for the Gold Cup?
Yeah.
Canada, same thing. Jamaica wasn't as strong as they could be. So Mexico ends up winning the Gold Cup, and all of a sudden is we found it. We found the manager for the future.
Fool's gold.
And they remove the interim tag on Jimmy Lozano, and he becomes the permanent manager. My biggest concern was he's not experienced enough. He's still learning on the job, and you don't learn on the job while managing the Mexican national team. And I feel that there were a couple of instances in which his tactics were not great. Team selection was not ideal. The way he's handled the quote-unquote older players like Memo Ochoa, Henry Martin. Why, if he managed the Olympic team, why isn't he giving more chances to younger players that he knows firsthand really well? And he was successful with those players. So to me, my conclusion is he's still learning on the job, and he doesn't have what it takes to be a full-time, permanent manager for the Mexican national team. So that was the biggest topic. What does this mean for Jimmy Lozano and his future? And we can go deeper into that if you want, but I would say this very, very quick. Whoever manages Copa America for Mexico has to be the manager for the World Cup, regardless of what the result is, what the criticism that may come with. But yeah, I think that's the number one reaction right now. What's up with Jimmy? Is he the guy or is he not the guy?
Do you think they'll make a change? Do you think, I mean, because we know Mexico does have a quick trigger. We've seen it.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Diego Coca, for crying out loud. I mean, but a lot of times, I mean, even before the, what was it, the 2018 World Cup, where they made like five changes?
Yeah.
Something that was crazy before I think Miguel Herrera got it. But do you think, what would you say if you would say after Copa America, would there, I imagine he makes it to Copa America.
I'm not sure.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure. I think, honestly, I feel they're thinking about it. And I had a couple of conversations with the guys that are basically Mexican national team insiders. And I talked to our good friend, Jose Ramon Fernandez, who's the legend of the business, and he knows everybody. And he says the owners are, there's a group of owners that are thinking about it.
By the way, can I just real quick pivot? That's what I love when people ask me about experience on broadcasting. And I look at Jose Ramon Fernandez, and you said it. That's why I like it, because they have contacts.
Exactly.
They know everyone. Exactly. You know everyone. I know so many people because we've been doing it for so long. We open up our phone. But he hits another level. So that's very valuable.
I think the president of the federation
got him on quick dial.
Doesn't let Jose Ramon go to voicemail, right? He takes the call. He takes the call. And he says that, I mean, his gut feeling is that they're going to have a meeting regarding Jimmy's future. They have two candidates, in-house candidates, if they want to make a change. Nacho Ambriz, former captain of the Mexican national team as a player.
Good.
Over 10 years.
Good time as a coach. Had some good moments.
And he's had his moments as a coach. And I think before Diego Coca, he had some momentum, right? In his favor, things didn't go his way, but he's now taking over Santos. And you know, Santos owner is one of the most powerful owners in Mexican soccer right now, Alejandro Aragorri. So I think that's an option. And the other option is Guillermo Almada, the guy who was previously the manager of Santos and currently managing Pachuca, who works really well with young Mexican talent. So
when you said in-house, you mean like in-house in Liga MX?
Liga MX, yeah. Yeah.
Do you think they could go to the exterior, or is it that's too risky?
No, I think it's extremely risky. Extremely
I like both risky. Those candidates. I like Ambriz and I like Almada.
I think it makes sense. Last time they went out of their way.
They both have a better pedigree than Jimmy Lozano.
100%. 100%. Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if in the next couple of weeks, the president of the Mexican Soccer Federation comes out and says, listen, Jimmy, we want you to stay put, by the way. We want you to be a part of the process. But we feel we need a stronger voice, a stronger hand for the players. And for the future, after the World Cup in 2026, maybe that's your time. But for now, when it's different ideas and when it's someone else that the players can respond to, but at the same time, look up to and understand that this national team really, truly needs a lot of changes. And maybe that first change starts with the manager.
Very interesting. The players. I look, Tuca Ferretti was on Football Picante, and he said, look, the Mexican player is not as good as the U.S. player right now. I think most people would agree with that. And certainly we can talk about the age-old argument about so many good Mexican players playing in Mexico. I mean, I was amazed how many players, but they're really good players, played for Monterrey or America that were on this roster. It was loaded. I mean, three, it was like two Monterrey players in the back line, but it could have been more. So there is, the playing in Europe obviously gives an advantage, and we've seen it with certainly development of Christian Pulisic and Weston McKennie to a lesser degree. Well, Ricardo Pepi, Sergiño Dest, so many guys are playing there. That has to make a difference. It's got to be, is there something more to it? Or do you think that the gap is pretty big, or do you, because we have, because I've seen good talent coming into this, Mauricio, and I was just disappointed the way they play. You know, Santi Jimenez, Luis Chavez, who was, I was waiting for him to get uncork one, and he's had a great season. Edson Alvarez, I watch him every week with West Ham. He's been excellent. Did Henry Martin play? What the hell? I'm just kidding. But but some of those guys didn't play well. How big is the gap?
I think the gap is big as it's ever been
between
U.S. talent and Mexican talent. I don't remember the gap being this big. And it's just getting bigger. That's the other thing. It's just getting bigger. Because whereas the U.S. keeps having more and more players going and finding European clubs, it doesn't have to be Manchester City. It doesn't have to be Real Madrid. It doesn't have to be Arsenal. But they are taking the steps that you need to become a better player, that only happens if you go to Europe, right?
Yeah, we all agree with that.
Those steps are being taken at a better, faster pace in the U.S. than in Mexico. In Mexico, the opposite is happening. Players that were already in Europe are coming back and play for Liga MX.
A bunch of them.
So Gerardo Arteaga, I know Andres Guardado is no longer part of the Mexican national team, but I mean, I think it says a lot. Andres Guardado also came back. And we can name a lot of players. Right now come to mind. It happened with Diego Reyes, happened with Miguel Ayun, happened with Hector Herrera, who came back from playing for Atlético de Madrid. Atlético de Madrid, making a lot of money now here in Major League Soccer. And maybe the only other player, and listen, Guillermo Ochoa is next and Chucky Lozano are both coming to Major League Soccer next season. I can tell you that now.
Whoa, stop right there. Chucky Lozano and Memo Ochoa. Yeah. I thought LAFC was going to make a run for Memo before they got Hugo Lloris. And if you're saying Chucky Lozano,
They were close.
I would have thought he would have been great. He would have been great.
They were this close.
Chucky Lozano, I know there's a new team coming in, and it makes sense. They're very close to Mexico. That's the one I think of, because they're going to want to make a splash.
That's maybe where Memo is going to end. I think
we're breaking news.
But
you say Chucky will. Oh,
yeah.
Are you now Mauricio Pedroso Fabrizio Romano? Breaking stories.
I think it's very likely that's going to happen.
You're like Don Ramon. You have those connections to
exactly like Don Ramon.
And you think Chucky's going to come too? He said.
I think he'll be playing Major League Soccer next season. Yeah, Memo 100%. Memo definitely will. Well, I cannot say 100%, but 90% chance he'll play in Major League Soccer. But that's a problem, Max.
Yeah, you're losing players to Europe and coming to MLS, where the standard's not what they're doing in Europe.
And if you, let's say you had Chucky Lozano and Guillermo Ochoa ending their careers in Europe and now making the transition back to America playing in Major League Soccer, fine. But if you said then, well, the 5 or 6 players are going to Europe, right, and they're all under 23, it's totally fine. That's perfect. But that's not the case. And the worst part is that there have been a few players from Santos, Tigres, Eugenio Pizzuto. He was the captain of the Mexican on the under-17 national team that won the third place a few years back, goes to Europe, doesn't really play a minute, has to come back and now plays for Tigres. No. Players from Santos, they have done the same thing. They go, they try. They just don't find minutes, or they feel like the money is not good enough for them and they will make more money playing in Mexico and they come back. So that's why my concern is that not only that the gap is as big as it's ever been, it's just getting bigger and bigger. And I was hearing this argument earlier today. Let's see if you agree with this. Do you remember Alberto García Aspe?
Oh, yes. Okay. That was my favorite. That was my favorite Mexico team, '94 World Cup.
'94 World Cup, exactly. I mean, he was the captain for Mexican national team for many years, right? Great player, historic player. But he said, that was probably his old man yellow clouds moment. When we were the great Mexican national team, we had only 2 players in Europe. The rest of us, it was Necaxa, America, Chivas.
What Alberto García Aspe sounds like?
Oh no, his voice is way deeper than mine.
Back in my day,
he sounds way angrier than that.
Yeah,
he sounds way angrier than that. Yeah. Well, but that was back in 1996, 1998. Times have changed, right? So right now, if you have the possibility of having, how many players do the U.S. What's the pool of players in Europe? It's over 50 players.
Yeah, right. It's probably pushing 70.
The pool of Mexican players is less than 20. And honestly, 6-8 of those players are not even considered for the Mexican national team. So if that doesn't change, Max, then the 2-0 will not only become a recurring thing, it will be a lesser result for you guys.
Well, that's why.
Why are we getting three or four?
Whoa, that's
in
crazy.
These games, if those players are as bad as they look.
Well, that's why it's alarming, because I mean, I think fans of the United States could sit here and laugh at Mexico's situation. I think it's alarming for the United States because that's the direct rival. Yeah. And that's the one team in CONCACAF that can
that's
lift you.
Point.
And if you don't have that, it's going to affect the U.S. and the United. I was joking on my on the YouTube show I did and mentioning how maybe USA could join tongue in cheeks. It would never happen, or maybe it would. Maybe joining South America. Maybe that happens naturally.
But that was a conversation that we had in Mexico for many years.
To join CONMEBOL.
We used to say, listen, if we stick to with CONCACAF, right, we're screwed. We're never going to grow as a country, as a national team, as a federation, or even the whole confederation is not going to grow. We are way too big. We're way too cool for CONCACAF. That's what we used to say. And we were arguing, why don't we go and play the CONMEBOL qualifiers to see where we're really at? And two reasons why that never happened. Number one, FIFA and CONCACAF would have never allowed it,
yeah,
right? Because yeah, Mexico is a cash cow of CONCACAF. That's number one. Number two, the executives of the Mexican Soccer Federation, they thought and said, listen, yes, probably our level would get up. We would up here if we compete against those guys. But then there's a bigger risk that we don't make the World Cup. And yeah, if we don't make the World Cup, then we miss on our cash cow, right?
Right.
So again, money dictates the decisions of the people that run Mexican soccer. It's never the sporting element to it, is never the benefit of the game. It's the benefit of their pockets. That's why we are where we are.
And to be honest, whether it's Mexico or United States, those trips to South America, they might, let's say, okay, there's 9 road games. Maybe you get to win one. I mean, even Bolivia is going to be hard. Yeah, I mean, going to Argentina, going to Brazil, yeah, going to Paraguay, going to Chile. It'd be difficult. So maybe we don't do it. We just keep it. But the World Cup's expanding. Everything's going to, maybe the world's going to get smaller and these confederational lines get blurred a bit. I wanted to say this about MLS. It could be even worse for the Mexican player because their life gets even better because in addition to making a ton of money, they don't have to deal with the Mexican media. So they come here and they have a good life. So they don't, you know, they're not really, I mean, as they should. And I think these are older players, so it's fine. But you get your cake and eat it too. So I don't know if younger Mexican players start making the move. I think that's the alarm bells, but we'll see. Memo Ochoa didn't have a good game.
He did not.
I like him a lot, and he's so good at certain penalty saves. He's good with his feet. He's a rare, rare talent anywhere in the world to have a goalkeeper like that. But you know, I thought there was a conversation where Luis Malagón might finally make his way in there. Do you think that is the Club America goalkeeper? Do you think that we're getting the end? Because I've been thinking this for like a year and a half and it never happens. He keeps going.
Yeah, you know what? I'm torn here because if you are a player with the baggage of Memo Ochoa and his experience, his leadership, you would expect them to lose their starting job, right? Just go out, and if it's clear and obvious that you're not longer the number one, then we'll move on and we'll bring Luis Angel Malagón and he'll become the starter. But even before this Final Four, I didn't think Memo Ochoa had lost his job.
No,
not.
I didn't
really
think so either. I just thought maybe, but it has to happen something.
But I agree. I agree with you. To the point in which Memo will be 41 if he starts for Mexico in the World Cup. And even though he's a great shot stopper, he's amazing, right? In short distance, his reflexes are still, I mean, I don't want to say intact, but they're still really good. He commands the box. He's a leader. But his reaction time naturally diminishes because of Father Time. And I feel that both goals that he conceded have to do with that? His reaction was a bit slower, don't you think?
Yeah, I talked about the Gio Reyna goal. Everyone's celebrating. That shouldn't have gotten in. It shouldn't have gone in.
Not even
he didn't hit
even,
it hard.
Not even Tyler Adams' goal.
No,
that's from 30 yards out. That's 30
yeah, that's
yards out.
That...
And I know there are a couple of players blocking his sight, and therefore he took that extra split second to react. But he did look slow. And will a player 10, 12 years younger would have stopped that shot? I don't know.
10 to 12 years. He's a
maybe not.
He's a viejo.
Yeah, maybe not. But I like Malagón's chances, at least in his reaction time to that shot. So all that being said, as I said about Jimmy Lozano, that I feel like it's time for the change. It's also time for a changing goal for the Mexican national team. Let Angel Malagón take that spot and then start to develop his confidence as a national team goalkeeper, as a national team starter, regular starter. He's going to make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. He's had some mistakes when he's had a few minutes. It happened against Ghana in a friendly, but then, I don't know if you remember, there's the previous round of Nations League. Memo gets injured in a crucial game against Honduras to punch the ticket to the Final Four.
That's right.
Angel Malagón plays, and he plays really well, and then they go to PKs, and he becomes a hero, right? I thought that was the moment in which the change was going to happen for good, but it didn't. So this is the way I see things going down. If Jimmy stays, he's going to stick with Memo. He's going to stick with Memo. If there's another manager,
It's an easier one for a manager to go there. I mean, right? That's just like that's like a blanket. I'm going to go with
him. Exactly. But I think at the same time, you are exposing the player a little bit. And listen, this is not about the manager or the player. This is about the team. What's best for the team. So I feel like if a new manager comes for Mexico, I think they'll make the change and Malagón will be the starter. And as I said, for the manager, whoever starts in goal during Copa America 2024, that has to be the starter in the World Cup in 2026.
How are we feeling about Copa America? I've got some things to work out. You know, Mexico are in Group B with Ecuador, Venezuela, Jamaica, a group they could win. They could win. They should qualify. I mean, the first game is Jamaica in Houston. That's going to be second game against Ecuador at SoFi. And then Glendale, Arizona. So the big venues opened up. That's going to be the Venezuela game. Did I get these Venezuela and Ecuador flags? I got it. No, did I get that incorrect?
I think you got.
Oh, my God. Venezuela is at SoFi.
Venezuela is SoFi.
Ecuador. Right. Yeah, they had the flags up there when I was reading, and those flags are very similar, but I still should know better.
Yeah.
They should. How do we like their chances at Copa America?
Listen, Jamaica has been a problem lately for the Mexican national team. They've made things complicated for the squad. It would all depend on Jamaica fixing their problems with their players. Leon Bailey says Leon Bailey doesn't want to play for the national team any longer. Michael Antonio, who you know really well, love him as a player.
And these guys weren't even on the squad.
No.
And they still almost beat the U.S. And
there you go.
Just blew the doors off of Panama.
There you go. So if Jamaica, if they're able to bring their A team, yeah, I mean, that's up in the air. Venezuela's playing better under the new manager. I think there have been a very pleasant surprise during qualifiers. And even now during their friendly match against Italy, I think they held their own and they looked like they belonged. And with Ecuador and the new regime, you don't know because they do have quality players. They have players
loaded.
And
playing in Europe now,
great teams,
a lot of them
in the Premier League in Spain and playing, not only being a part of rosters, but actually seeing important minutes. So
you're not feeling so good.
No, I mean, I'm not. No, why would
you're getting
I?
Me nervous for Mexico now.
Why would I feel so good?
It's by the way, it's important for Copa America. I think the CONCACAF teams have to do well because I want Conmebol to see, look at this and say, we got to do this again.
Let's make this a regular thing.
This is great. But if teams don't do well, then they're like, you know, if they don't get the Mexico cash cow into the next rounds in the U.S., I mean, they want the U.S., one of those teams to make a semi, maybe both. But
no, I mean, I think they're going to qualify to the next round. I think that's going to happen.
Might be just a tight squeeze.
It's not going to be easy. Look, man, a lot will depend, again, on who's the manager and just how players make this final run in club season, right? What happens with Santi? Can he do enough to convince the manager, whoever that is, that he has what it takes to be the starter? Can Chucky Lozano improve his level in the final 2 months?
Yeah, he's dipped
with PSV. You know what concerns me with Chucky? I think his confidence has really, really taken a hit.
Oh, man.
He doesn't look like a confident guy.
He doesn't.
I thought he was okay against the U.S., by the way. He was probably Mexico's best player. We doesn't say much. But I think his confidence has been shaky, to say the least, during this year at PSV.
Were you surprised with Santi didn't start?
I was not surprised, just because I know how much Jimmy Lozano likes Henry Martin.
Because Henry Martin had a stinker.
That was his over 23 player for the Olympics. And he started every game. And I don't even think that Henry Martin was I don't think the number 9 was the issue, right? Creating chances was the issue against the U.S. But I feel like Santi can do enough during the last few weeks of the season with Feyenoord to convince the manager that he can be the starter. And then we'll see. But if you want to check my confidence meter right now, the team,
give me a percentage.
I would give you 75% confident that they will qualify.
That's pretty high. I thought you're going to say 30.
I think they'll pull it off. My confidence level that they will win the group's probably at 35-40.
Okay.
And stranger things we've seen when it comes to Mexico advancing in a tournament played in the U.S., Max.
That's a tough group because I think anyone can get a result over anyone in that group, right? With Venezuela and Ecuador. And like Venezuela, they look like they're going to make their first World Cup the way the qualifying's going. The level of player is much better. It's great. MLS has helped out in that because they have a lot of MLS-based players or guys who played in MLS. So at the USA, it's pretty clear to me that Uruguay and USA are going to qualify in that group. But, you know, we'll see. But we have a couple months to get ready for that, Mauricio.
Yep.
Appreciate you jumping on with me. This is I hope you're feeling a little better after a half hour or so with me. And maybe
I feel better that I'm talking to you because, you know, you're my guy. I love you. I love seeing you and knowing you're
my man.
Good, doing your thing. So that puts me in a great mood. That really puts me in a great mood.
You know what would have been better with this if you brought some enchilada potosinos or
whatever. Next time I'll do. But listen, it's like I said earlier today in one of the many shows that I've been a part of. All the stages of grief, right? I think before Sunday's game, we were still I'm very upset every time we lose to the U.S. Very, very upset. And that transition to now I'm sad.
Yeah.
Because when you're upset, it means that there's something you could have done better.
Yes, you're close.
To avoid that result, right? It's on you. You can still take control of the situation and make it better. That's why, because you didn't, therefore you're upset. But now when you feel like things are getting out of your control, when it's not in your hands, it's sadness, which, and by the way, it's just, there's this other element to it, which is around the corner, that is just accepting the fact that, like Pedro Martinez said, the Yankees is my father, right? The Yankees is my daddy.
It's mi papa.
The Yankees is my daddy. And like Pedro Martinez, we will just have to face the media and accept.
Oh, man. Woo. That is a transition. Like I said, this Mexico situation is a lot more interesting for, unfortunately, the wrong reasons. But I for one, hope they can get back on the rails. I think it's important for the U.S. It's important for the region. And it's important for the Copa. Mauricio Pedros of ESPN, ESPN Deportes. Thanks for joining me, man. Miss you, and we'll get together soon for a couple.
You too, Max Bredos. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you having me. Even if it's under this situation, you know I'm your guy.
We'll come back and have
I'm your guy.
We'll have you back for a nice feel good show.
Sounds good. I like that.
Mauricio Pedrosa. There won't be a check complete this week as we focused in on the USA-Mexico game, but make sure you rate, review, download, subscribe, tell a friend. We will be back next week to talk about more. Well, I don't know what we're going to talk about, but we'll be back and we'll have great guests like Mauricio. So we'll see you then. Until we meet again, Plácido Domingo.